The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Regarding the ongoing situation in Iran, I know there has been a lot of speculation amongst all of you in the media regarding the president's decision-making and whether or not the United States will be directly involved. In light of that news, I have a message directly from the president, and I quote, "Based on the fact that there's a substantial chance of negotiations that may or may not take place with Iran in the near future, I will make my decision whether or not to go within the next 2 weeks."
The 2 weeks. There's been a lot of discussion about it. How do you read it?
I think that Donald Trump has never wavered from the ultimate objective, which is that the Iranian nuclear program has to end. It has to be dismantled. It has to be destroyed. The only question has been whether it's done militarily or whether it's done voluntarily. He gave them a 60-day deadline. They let the deadline pass, and so Israel began bombing on day 61. And now he is basically holding out. This is your last chance. The time for negotiation is over. There's not going to be any kind of deal. This is a question of whether Iran cries Amu, which is Persian for uncle, and allows U.S. to come in and blow up Fordo from inside, or we do it from without, from the skies above with B-2 bombers. But I think there is zero chance that the Fordo nuclear facility survives this encounter with Iran.
This is a Fox News alert. News from the president of the United States that there has been an attack inside Iran. Just moments ago, President Donald Trump putting out on Truth Social, "We have completed our very successful attack on 3 nuclear sites in Iran, including Fordo, Natanz, and Esfahan. All planes are now outside of Iran airspace." Again, this from President Donald Trump. "A full payload of bombs was dropped on the primary site, Fordo. All planes are safely on their way home. Congratulations to our great American warriors. There is not another military in the world that could have done this. Now is the time for peace. Thank you for your attention to this matter." Again, that's just seconds ago from President Donald Trump.
The mission began with deception. Under the cover of darkness, shortly after midnight, Operation Midnight Hammer launched early Saturday morning. 9 B-2 stealth bombers took off from Whiteman Air Force Base in Missouri, but 2 acted as decoys, flying west over the Pacific for all to see and a scheduled refueling in the skies near Hawaii with a follow-on flight to Guam. But 7 B-2s did not fly west. They quietly peeled away and secretly flew east with minimal communication. Their destination? Iran's underground nuclear facilities. First into Iran were American fighter jets to also serve as decoys and draw fire from the Iranians. The B-2s then entered Iranian airspace at 6 p.m. Eastern, just after 2 a.m. local. 40 minutes later, 14 massive bunker-busting bombs were released by the B-2s. 12 hit the underground nuclear site in Fordo, 2 hit Natanz. At the same time those 15-ton bombs from the B-2s hit their targets, 30 Tomahawk cruise missiles launched from a guided missile submarine slammed into Isfahan, with its centrifuges buried even deeper than Fordo.
"Iran's key nuclear enrichment facilities have been completely and totally obliterated.
Initial battle damage assessments indicate that all 3 sites sustained extremely severe damage and destruction."
A decision was made that will change the reality of the current war between Israel and Iran and possibly create a scenario where the Iranians really have no other option than to give in, because the president has hit them so hard with these strikes and the Israelis are continuing to take out their top military leadership that the country is in a state of disarray. This is a historic moment in the Middle East tonight, and again, an opportunity for the region, as the president laid out in his statement, for peace in the future, because this is a region that understands peace through strength.
"Iran, the bully of the Middle East, must now make peace. If they do not, future attacks will be far greater and a lot easier. I want to thank and congratulate Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu. We worked as a team like perhaps no team has ever worked before. And we've gone a long way to erasing this horrible threat to Israel. I want to thank the Israeli military for the wonderful job they've done. And most importantly, I want to congratulate the great American patriots who flew those magnificent machines tonight, and all of the United States military on an operation the likes of which the world has not seen in many, many decades. Hopefully, we will no longer need their services in this capacity. I hope that's so. And I want to just thank everybody, and in particular, God. I want to just say we love you, God, and we love our great military. Protect them. God bless the Middle East. God bless Israel, and God bless America. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Another historic moment, an unusual end there to not the reference to God, I guess the numerous references to God and to the military. But these, you know, Sam and I were talking yesterday about just the last 12 months. We're coming up to, I think, June 27 was when the Biden debate debacle happened. And just think about all of the earth-shaking events that have happened since that time. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. You can get to the live video stream of this program at TrumpetDaily.com or at the Rumble channel. Just go to rumble.com/Trumpet Daily. Lots and lots to get to on today's show. We've got an update on Celtic Throne 2. They went ahead with their performance yesterday, and in many ways it was maybe the best yet on this tour. It didn't have as many people. I think there were 700 there, but for the dance school that my son came out of, Isaac McDonald and some of the gals as well, that was situated right in Birmingham, England, and quite a few from the Carey family turned out to watch the show, including some of the teachers, the instructors that trained our dancers for many, many years. And we've got a short clip that we'll play for you later in the show. Some backstage insights, if you'd like to stay tuned for that. Speaking of clips, we also, all along the Thunder basketball team run, I was telling Sam had a few ideas for clips. I said, no, let's just hold off. If they win the championship, though, we'll lead with the Thunder highlights. Well, then the United States decided to bomb the nuclear facilities in Iran. You can't shove these events aside. It's incredible. But we do have, I think, 2 minutes worth of highlights for that game last night. A pretty ugly game. There was a gruesome injury for the Pacers superstar. But with what we've put together, it at least makes it look pretty exciting. If you're a Thunder fan, I mean. So I'll try to give you fair warning in case you are a big fan of the Pacers and you can just either turn the sound down or turn it off for a couple of minutes. But there was, I think, a pretty neat reaction to the win yesterday for Thunder from someone who's from the state, no longer lives here, and just talks about how that, you know, it's good for the state. It's good for Oklahoma. And it made me think of the article we gave to you last week from Newsmax, where it talked about this dance group from Oklahoma that was bringing hope to Israel. They're very different cases in so many ways, as you well know. I mean, basketball is just a sport in this world, and it's played in a way that I'm sure will be cleaned up significantly in the world tomorrow. But that said, it is nice to see some positive press for our state, the state of Oklahoma. So, Saturday night, dramatic events, earth-shaking events happening. And as I was sitting there and a few of us were emailing each other back and forth, I mean, it was hard not to cheer it on. In so many ways, you're thinking, where was this 20 or 30 years ago? I saw a tweet with a picture of George Bush, Donald Rumsfeld, the whole team that was, you know, fighting the war against terrorism back in the days that followed 9/11. And I think the caption said, who would have thought that the apprentice star would be the one to actually go after the head of the snake or Iran? It didn't say head of the snake. It took Donald Trump all these years later to finally do something. So I'm sitting there thinking that on the one hand. And then on the other hand, I'm hearing the statements from Donald Trump and everyone on Fox News thinking, well, they're talking as if the mission now has been accomplished. And they're talking with such confidence that the problem with Iran is over. It's certainly not. And we know this because of Bible prophecy. I've mentioned the King of the South booklet many times in the last week. This is the time to dig into this. This is the time to get God's perspective on all of these prophecies. And even the point that we made earlier this year, my father's article about the United States abandoning Israel. I mean, that still stands. It's not still, though, it's nice to see some unity and some teamwork together between Netanyahu and Donald Trump. But this also manages to give Donald Trump quite a lot of leverage now going forward. And we've already seen what he did with the hostage debacle in Gaza and the pressure that was put upon Bibi Netanyahu to just back away from eliminating Hamas. So there's a lot of moving parts here. And of course, even the Psalm 83 Alliance, we know that Hamas and Hezbollah, they're going to peel away from Iran, and that Iran's going to turn to other allies or strengthen other allies. And then we also know that Germany's going to get involved as well, and that Germany is going to enter into a Psalm 83 Alliance with quite a few of the Arab nations in the Middle East, and that ultimately, it's Germany that removes the Iranian threat. The threat on Saturday night was not removed. And really, we don't even know the extent of the damage in those three nuclear sites. To talk about all three of them as if they're gone. Well, has anyone gotten down there and inspected them? It's interesting to just see the reactions. Axios talked about, speaking of this now forming or strengthening alliance between the U.S. and Israel when it looked like it was, you know, virtually separated. Axios talked about how that all the talk of diplomacy with respect to Iran was, I guess, in their words, a head fake. President Trump told the world last Thursday that he would decide within the next 2 weeks whether to strike Iran. And then 48 hours later is when this operation was in motion. And that, like you saw in the cold open, that's a pretty incredible story as well. These B-2 bombers leaving from Missouri. I think in all total, they're in the air for 37 hours. And the pilots, I guess, just sitting there for 37 hours flying. And it's being refueled in the air. And then it makes its way to Iran, drops those bombs, and then flies back to Missouri nonstop. No stops along the way. It says here that President Trump remained open to aborting the mission if a diplomatic window emerged, but his public countdown doubled as a smokescreen, concealing a strike plan that was already in motion, according to multiple officials. It was a head fake. It was a distraction. It was a ruse. It was meant to make Iran think that it had a secure position. It was a false sense of security, we now know. The president wanted to buy time, it says, quoting one of the insider officials. The bombing of Iran's nuclear facilities on Saturday marked the most direct and consequential U.S. military action against Iran since the Islamic Republic was founded in 1979. They've never been confronted. And that's why we were writing at the end of 2001, just after 9/11, that look, the source of this problem is in Iran. And look at all of the wasted resources, money, American blood that has spilled in the region, in Iraq, in Afghanistan. And each time we had high hopes that, look, if we squash it over here, it'll go away. There won't be a bigger problem down the road. And I'll take you through the timeline of these past 46 years. I mean, Senator Tom Cotton has done a really good job of just exposing what it is that we've been at war with. I mean, here the United States has evidently a somewhat successful strike on Iran. But then you listen to U.S. officials and they want to reassure everybody, we're not at war. We're not at war. Well, from Iran's perspective, we've been at war for 46 years. And by the way, all the strikes, including October 7, I mean, that didn't involve nuclear weapons. My point being, they're still causing a lot of damage. They're still killing a lot of people. They're killing a lot of Jews. They've killed a lot of Americans. And you can see why Bibi and President Trump, to his credit, would say we certainly can't give those people a nuclear bomb on top of that. You know, another story here is this just obliterates the dear leader's dream. Barack Obama wanted Iran to get a nuclear weapon. That was the whole point of the JCPOA. That's pretty incredible. I mean, this is like the end of the official end of the Obama era. You could look at it that way. And of course, we, Tomorrow's News Today, I mean, we've been talking about Obama being silenced. Oh, this is exactly the opposite of what Obama wanted. He wanted those facilities to continue producing the enriched uranium. He wanted them to ultimately have a bomb. He wanted Iran to be the strongest power in the Middle East, not Israel, not Saudi Arabia, not Egypt, Iran. And Iran's taken quite the hit. So Axios lays it out and says, actually, they've been working at it for months, President Trump and Prime Minister Netanyahu. And even Trump, I think, alluded to that in his short speech on Saturday night. On the other hand, I mean, maybe the strike happening when it did shows that President Trump is partially repenting for the position that he took on Hamas and the hostages and how everything had to be solved on day one, the day of the inauguration. And that, you know, went up in flames right away. We don't know exactly what was going on behind the scenes. But from JNS, it says, and again, Israel's very, very grateful right now at this action. Israeli President Isaac Herzog on Sunday morning praised the Trump administration for ordering the strikes. It says, in the pages of human history, this is a moment when the principles of liberty, responsibility, and security have triumphed. A decisive moment between the axis of terror and evil and the axis of hope. He goes on to thank President Trump. But again, just going back to what has happened since the debate debacle. This is just 12 months ago. Joe Biden, after years of fakery, the regime media telling us, hey, he's never been better. We'll never forget what Joe Scarborough said. I've worked with him for decades. And I mean, this version of Biden is the best yet. And then the debate happened. And then everything that happened after that. Look at how different the world is today than it was just 12 months ago. Now, I don't want to rain on the parade of the Israeli president, Herzog, but what will the situation look like a year from now, or even 6 months from now? Listen to this bit from General Jack Keane on Fox News, clip 5.
We see an end in sight for this regime, and the idea that some people think this is going to be World War III is just nonsense. I mean, that is so shallow thinking, with no reasoning to see what the facts are here in front of us. We're ending a war, not starting a war.
So that's him taking a shot, obviously, at the Bannons and the Tuckers of this world, saying that if the U.S. gets involved in this, the world's just going to blow up right away. And of course, you know, people like this, and he's had some good commentary on Fox. We've got nothing against him. But to just say that we've ended a war just like that, it's over. So they're not going to be plotting another October 7 or a barracks bombing or a bombing of an embassy or something like that. It's happening all the time. And it's good that they don't have nukes, or at least not the capability that we know of. There's a report from The Telegraph. Fears over Iran's missing 400 kg of uranium. This is from out of Britain. Satellite images show a line of trucks at Fordow before the strikes, with analysts suggesting materials were frantically moved. I mean, there's pictures from above with this line of trucks. You can see it there at the top of the article. Iran claims to have smuggled almost all of the country's highly enriched uranium to a secret location before the U.S. launched strikes. So, again, they lie about everything. We don't know how much of this is true, but that is a satellite image. And it is showing a lot of trucks. What were they doing at Fordow? Fordow was the one that took the biggest hit. And if what happens if they move things out? You've got Vladimir Putin, for his part, over the weekend saying, hey, you know, what's to stop us, Russia, China, friends of Iran, from just simply giving them nukes? This is not God's world, obviously. I was saying to my wife over the weekend, as we learned more details about the miraculous exodus of our Celtic Throne production from Israel last week, making their way through the Sinai Peninsula down to Sharm el-Sheikh, flying out to Saudi Arabia and other places. Right in the midst of this war-torn region, God's hand, God intervening to protect our people, to make sure that they moved on to the next assignment. Going back to what I said to my wife, I said, you know what, I bet, among other reasons, there's probably multiple reasons, but I bet one reason that God, you know, sent even our young people, I mean, Newsmax is writing about this incredible story, but he sent even our young people through these dangerous, you know, this precarious situation, just so that they could see that this is not God's world. Now, you obviously see, too, that God looks after his people. I mean, I think I made this point last week, okay, but this is not God's world. And it's amazing to me how, even in the midst of turmoil, even in the midst of these perilous times, you have these high-ranking officials. They make one strike and say, there it is. It's over. No chance for World War III. This is the end of war, not the beginning. There's trouble. There's problems on both sides. You know, I think Tucker and those people were hysterical. You know, I listened to part of an interview with him talking to a military veteran. This is, I think, just a couple days after. He talked with Senator Cruz, and he had all those gotcha questions, and he went after Cruz being tied to AIPAC, and, well, you're just a foreign lobbyist, basically. You're representing Israel. I mean, it's just really nasty, and he was interrupting. It was unusual. But then you see him in the next 2 days, and he's like, you know, I'm if they do strike Iran, I hope I'm wrong, and I hope, you know, if people point out that my hysterical reaction was over the top, you know, I'll happen. I don't want to see violence. I want to see peace. So again, maybe there's an ounce of repentance in some of these different statements. Who knows? My point is that we're just all over the map. At this time, more than ever, we need the spirit of sound-mindedness. We need God's perspective. We need to view things the way God does. What does God see, or what does God say when he looks at this world, when he views this world? Why would the Apostle Paul 2,000 years ago call this the present evil world? Well, because there's lots of evil, that's why. And it's not like we have to sit around and be depressed about it. There's hope. There's hope in productions like Celtic Throne. I mean, here, if last night's program in Birmingham, England, turns out to be one of the most successful of the whole tour, Well, just the fact that they made it to the UK exhausted after 60 hours of travel and were able to produce their best show yet, according to the director. That's remarkable. That's miraculous, I'd say. That's awesome. There is hope, even in this dying world. But we better make sure that our thinking aligns with God's thinking, that we're seeing what he sees. Does the strike, as long overdue as it was on Saturday night, does this end the threat coming from the King of the South? The head of the snake is still there. The acts of terrorism, they're still going to happen, sorry to say. You know, it wasn't that long ago. Last week, in fact, where Donald Trump was calling on Iran to unconditionally surrender. Did that happen Saturday night? The bombing campaign was successful from all that we can see, at least in hitting those facilities. But what if some of the enriched uranium was moved beforehand? Furthermore, are the mullahs repentant? Think about this, just comparing it to the World War II era and what we had to do to get Adolf Hitler to unconditionally surrender, or Japan to it took two atom bombs for Japan to finally say, okay, we give up, we surrender. Western nations, Israelite nations, don't fight that way anymore. We fight limited wars. Our wars are very strategic. The attacks are precise. We go after a weapon or a missile launcher or a terrorist, and that's it. That's it. The thought of bombing Dresden or Hiroshima, I mean, that's just off the charts. That's not an option. And it's not like we're hoping for that on this show. But how do you get these madmen, these dictators, these tyrants to unconditionally surrender? How do you do it? Is bombing Fordo going to do it? Or Natanz? Listen to President Trump from last week. This is clip 7.
President Trump has called for Iran's unconditional surrender amid this growing conflict with Israel.
He posted on Truth Social saying, "We know exactly where the so-called supreme leader is hiding. Our patience is wearing thin." He ended his statement with "unconditional surrender" in capital letters.
Specifically, it's better than a ceasefire. What are you looking for here? An end. A real end, not a ceasefire. An end. So something that will be permanent. Or giving up entirely. Is that okay, too?
The ceasefire means like everything's going swimmingly. We'll take a little time off. It's not. We're not looking for a ceasefire. We're looking for a total, complete victory. Again, you know what the victory is. No nuclear weapon.
What does unconditional surrender mean?
Well, you know what it means. Unconditional.
Can you explain it for those who don't?
Very simple words. A very simple. Unconditional surrender. That means I've had it. Okay, I've had it. I give up. No more. Then we go blow up all the, all the nuclear stuff that's all over the place there.
And we played that last part last week on the show. And, I thought when I heard it last week, I thought, oh, come on, this reporter. I mean, you know what unconditional surrender means. But now I'm like, well, the reporter has a point. What does it mean? What does total victory mean? When you say they have to just give up, what does that mean? Or maybe we should ask it this way. Has Iran, the mullahs, and maybe there will be a regime change. I don't know. Well, do we know that that's going to make things better? But leave that aside. Have the mullahs totally given up? Have they unconditionally surrendered? That's why, as I say, I'm sitting there Saturday night on the one hand saying, well, it's about time that the U.S. did something. And then on the other hand, I'm like, wow, that sounds so overconfident. That sounds like you're saying the mission is over. That sounds like you're saying the war has ended, has it? This is from Responsible Statecraft. It says, with the decision to bomb three of Iran's nuclear sites, President Trump has put the United States on a reckless path that risks another Middle East war. So here's another publication trying to find, you know, the middle ground or trying to know, well, what's going to happen from this. It says here, even if the strikes achieve short-term tactical success, they have turned a challenge that could have been managed diplomatically into a military crisis. So here's a group saying it should have been solved by diplomacy. But does diplomacy solve it? I mean, the threats are real. You've got reports from Fox News and others saying that, you know, there's sleeper cells in the United States. We're going to have to be on alert. Our bases in Iraq, in that region of the world. I mean, and this guy, I should have gotten his name, but the guy that sat down with Tucker, he was talking about, you know, these bases that we have in Iraq that, you know, we're basically there. The military men that we have there training the Iraq security forces. And among those forces, you've got certain factions or militias that are loyal to the mullahs in Iran. And you just shake your head going, what kind of a mission is this? Now, it's one thing to have a base in that part of the world where you can flex your military might, your power. It's another thing to be over there trying to befriend the Iraqi security forces. And then, you know, there's Iranian militias in the mix and you're trying to, you know, reach out to them. How does this solve the problems of that part of the world? How does that end wars? And then, of course, to Tucker's point, they're right there next to Iran. I mean, and then they become a target after the United States launches those strikes into Iran. I mean, these are problems that are not able to be solved by men. It's going to take the intervention of God to solve these problems. This article says, Vice President J.D. Vance has claimed that the U.S. is not at war with Iran. We're at war with Iran's nuclear program. I mean, that's the same mentality of the Bush people coming out of 9/11. We are not at war with Iran or any of the nations around there. We're at war with terrorism. Okay, well, who's carrying it out? You know, where's the source? We are not at war with Iran. We're at war with Iran's nuclear program. Well, it's Iran's nuclear program. How can you be at war with Fordo, but not with the regime that built Fordo? The thinking, it's the same delusion that you saw coming out of 9/11. Here over the weekend, Iran's ordered the closing of the Straits of Hormuz. You've got Russia, as I said earlier, talking about ways to get Iran nukes anyway. I mean, this shows you how limited war is. You can take out a nuke facility, but do you solve the problem? Does that go to the source? Listen to Secretary of State Marco Rubio on Fox News, clip 6.
The president has said many times no nuclear weapons, but the ultimate goal also happens to be no biological weapons, chemicals, no drones, no proxy warfare. Do you believe that the Iranians will follow that and you'll achieve the ultimate goal of success here long term?
Well, I don't know what they're going to decide to do next. If they're being rational, I think they realize, you know, if what they want is a country that has a nuclear energy program, they can have that. I mean, we, you know, many countries around the world, I don't like the regime, but we're not into the regime change business here. We're into the safety and security of the United States business. So that's a choice they'll have to make. I hope they're being rational in their decision making. But I think the most important thing I hope they realize is the game is up.
I hope they're being rational. 46 years as the number one state sponsor of terrorism. And, you know, there's Bartiromo saying, okay, there's the nuke program, and you took strikes at that, but what about biological weapons, chemicals, drones, October 7, fighting through proxies? How do you get rid of that problem? How do you solve that problem? It may not cause damage on the scale of a nuclear weapon. But October 7 was a year and a half ago, and they murdered 1,200 Jewish civilians, men, women, babies, children, all of them. How do you solve it? Well, you can't come away from a 37-hour strike that nobody knew about because they're stealth. They're stealth bombers. And confidently declare that this is the end of the war. This is it. It's over. Iran still has power. It certainly does. You think about what it's done for the past 46 years without nuclear weapons. It was rushing to build nuclear weapons, and it was rushing to do that so it could use them. But look at what it's accomplished, I mean, from their perspective, even without nuclear weapons. You talk about a forever war. It's like they've been at war forever with the United States, with the little nation of Israel, using those proxies over the last decades to conceal their their involvement. Well, it's not us. It's, you know, it's over there. It's in Lebanon. You got to deal with Lebanon. And of course, Western leaders have often done it that way until just last week or a week before when Benjamin Netanyahu said, "Okay, we've finally got to do something about Iran." I mean, this has been going on for 46 years. I mean, the moment they became the radical Islamist state. That's what this is. Religious fanaticism. And here's the Secretary of State talking about, well, I hope they'll be rational. 1979, 66 Americans taken hostage at the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, held for 444 days, almost a year and a half. You had the devastating Beirut bombings in 1983, 17 Americans killed in the U.S. Embassy, 238 troops killed at the Marine barracks. Here again, Iran was responsible for this. I mean, you can have a strike at maybe a terrorist cell in Lebanon in response to this, what happened in 1983, but does it get to the source of the problem? 1994, Buenos Aires, Argentina bombing, Jewish community center attack, 85 killed, 300 wounded. Iran, using its proxy Hezbollah, carried out that attack. The Khobar Towers in 1996, 19 U.S. Air Force members killed. I mean, they're running this. They're running this on Fox, on a continuous loop. Just to remind people, look, this has been going on for 46 years. And then you look at the 9/11 plan. I mean, that's the one thing that is generally left out of what they're scrolling on a continuous loop. As if Iran had nothing to do with 9/11 or its planning or giving Osama bin Laden safe harbor. This is from the Washington Free Beacon. I forget the date on this. It's from a while back, but it says Al-Qaeda boss and 9/11 mastermind Osama bin Laden spent months living and receiving treatment in Iran, according to a bombshell interview on Tucker Carlson's show. I think this was when he was back at Fox. It refers to a report by Congressman Kurt Weldon. It says here, I find out within months after 9/11 that bin Laden has been sighted in a town called Ladiz, the former congressman told Carlson. It's not in Afghanistan. It's not in Pakistan. It's in Iran. Well, no wonder bin Laden would go to Iran, because no one had the courage to confront the head of the snake. Instead, they wanted, you know, smaller forever wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. But don't go after the head of the snake that could have ended the war earlier on. 3 months ago, well, further on, this is from NBC News from 2017. Newly released bin Laden document describes Iran Al-Qaeda link. See, these are the things that the reports that the State Department, you know, even the mainstream media, they just want to kind of brush aside. We don't want to go for Iran because that's just going to make the whole region blow up. But then you see these reports. It says here, a document seized the night Navy SEALs killed Osama bin Laden suggests that Al-Qaeda and Iran had a relationship more complicated and intimate than previously known, one that included threats and kidnappings, but also occasional cooperation. You mean Al-Qaeda would cooperate with Iran? Listen, I know it's complicated over there with the Sunni Arabs, the Shia movement as well, and how there's hatred between those groups. But they have a common enemy in the Jews and in the big Satan that is America. It says here, the document was among a massive trove. Well, it talks about what they uncovered. According to officials, the document traces the history of the relationship, starting with the escape of a group of Al-Qaeda officials and their families from Afghanistan following the U.S. invasion in September 2001. Bin Laden dispatched the group of Al-Qaeda leaders known as the Al-Qaeda Management Council to Iran. Iran's there saying, sure, he can come over here for safety because they're not going to come after us. At various points in the relationship, the document reveals Iran offered Al-Qaeda help in the form of money, arms, and training in Hezbollah camps in Lebanon in exchange for striking American interests in Saudi Arabia and the Gulf. Wow. Pretty amazing. For 46 years, talk about a forever war. This is from Tom Cotton, the senator. Iran has been terrorizing the civilized world since 1979 and has the blood of thousands of Americans on their hands. So how do you eliminate that? If you're only at war, as the vice president said, if you're only at war with the nuclear program, what do you do about the blood that's on their hands, the blood of thousands of Americans, to say nothing of the 1,200 from October 7? Here again, we could give the same message that we were giving in the Trumpet magazine there at the tail end of 2001. This is when you're at war with a tactic, that's a war you're not going to be able to win. When you're at war with terrorism, or when you're at war against a nuclear program, that's a war that you cannot win. You're not going to get unconditional surrender. And again, these lessons of history will show us that as well, just looking back to World War II, as I said earlier. When we come back, we've got some sports footage for you. If you're a Pacers fan, sorry about the loss, and more than that, I think the catastrophic injury that Halliburton suffered last night. I think, I'll leave that aside. I don't want to get into physical health as well. We'll limit it to sports. And then an update, if we have time, on Celtic Throne 2 in Birmingham, England as well. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
In 1994, Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury asked, is Iraq about to fall to Iran? It was a bold statement at the time, but over the next 20 years, this forecast became reality. Today, Iran is the undisputed king in the Middle East. In the early 1990s, we identified Iran as the prophesied king of the south. In the book of Daniel, it says this king of the south will push against the king of the north. These prophecies are being fulfilled before our eyes. To learn more about these incredible prophecies, request your free copy of The King of the South. This booklet examines the history and current events of the Middle East under the light of Bible prophecy. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
Rick Carlisle thought he did. Dort has to hoist one up. And he knocks it down! Lou Dort with a Hail Mary as the shot clock was expiring. And the game is tied again. They're 10 of 20 from three-point range. SGA tries to answer and does. His first three-pointer. Hildas Alexander. The spin. The pass. Williams open three. That one bounces in. Hartenstein kicks it out the corner. Kayson Wallace puts it a three. Connell deflected by Hartenstein. Throws it ahead. Wallace goes up for the layup. It's good. Defense turning to offense. 7 on the 24. Three-pointer SGA puts it in. Indiana hoping for a miracle. Dort reaches in and comes up with another steal. 20-second turnover for Indiana. The Thunder have taken the NBA by storm. For the first time, the NBA champion resides in Oklahoma City. The storybook season is complete.
And to the Oklahoma City Thunder, a team-first mentality, homegrown all-stars, and a very special culture. Clay Bennett, Sam Presti, Coach Daigneault, and this amazing team. Congratulations, you're the 2025 NBA champions.
This is a win for the fans, the best fans in the world. Love you guys.
Nice to see the love there for Oklahomans. As I say, it's brought some positive publicity to the state. Also enjoyed the commentator saying that the Thunder are taking the NBA by storm. Their name, I mean, the name for the team is Thunder. This is what Oklahoma in many ways is known for outside the state. Tornadoes, maybe a little bit about the Oklahoma City bombing back in the 90s. Not very good things, you know. A destruction that comes from a tornado or from a terrorist. So it's nice, as I say, to see some positive publicity. This is from that resident of Colorado I mentioned at the top, who is from Oklahoma, and she wrote this article for the Daily Oklahoman. She says, Colorado's beautiful. There are mountains. The air is thin. The lattes and homes are wildly overpriced for a reason. And I can't tell you how many times someone has smirked at me after I say I'm from Oklahoma. You don't seem like you're from Oklahoma. You're actually smart. Did you marry your cousin? Do you even have a Trader Joe's? She says, so when the OKC Thunder won the NBA Finals, it wasn't a win only for the players. It was a beautiful, cathartic, deeply Okie-style moment of, we may not be your coastal elite darlings, but we're here. We're loud, and we just beat every team out there. It says perhaps that's why last night, when SGA cradled the hard-fought trophy, I wiped tears off my face and hoped my Colorado friends didn't notice. I felt so ridiculous. These players don't even know I exist. This wasn't my win, but maybe it was, just a little. Along with all overlooked states between coasts, shout out to Indiana as well. Oklahoma is the punchline until we're the headline. It says, we Okies have been called hicks, yokels, backwards, Bible thumpers, and uneducated nobodies, but what we are always is loyal to our teams, to our people, to the land that raised us. It says, and when one of ours rises, we tend to rise with them. So someone that's pretty excited, like so many others in the state at the moment. As I say, nice to see some positive publicity for the state that also happens to be the home of God's work. I mentioned that Newsmax piece earlier today. I think we went through it on Thursday or maybe last Wednesday, I forget. But even in that piece, a great article about Celtic Throne and the impact that it's had on Israel. And now, of course, it's in the UK. It just talked about this little group of families, dancers, performers from central Oklahoma. And I think that's what is so astounding to some of the teachers that our dancers have performed or been trained under over the years. I think that's what they're so astounded by when they look at Celtic Throne 1 or 2, both of them, and they say, this is produced by one school? I mean, the big productions, Riverdance, Lord of the Dance, I mean, they just basically pluck the world-class dancers from all over the world, and they've got the very best dancers in the world, but they don't have what Celtic Throne has. This is a little bit of an insight into the backstage banter. And you have one of our teachers from Birmingham, England, who's traveled over to this campus a few times over the years. And of course, we've had, when some of our dancers have lived there in the Midlands, they've trained under her. But you see her backstage. I think this is at intermission last night in Birmingham, England. Clip 9.
All us watching out there, oh, and me personally, seeing the rehearsals coming right from when I was last in America, seeing it, and you're all in your sweats, you know, your t-shirt, and just working everything out. I just cannot believe that I'm actually watching you out on the stage doing your thing. So we're all so professional. You'll put them ones to shame there in Riverdance and Lord of the Dance. I tell you, nobody seems to work as hard as you guys. It's really, really actually very emotional watching you all dance up there together, like bonding. You can just see that you all love it and the audience loves it. It's just incredible. And we just want to thank you. Thank you.
Very appreciative. And we appreciate her as well. That article from Newsmax, remember the headline? They changed this soon after, by the way, after the show I went through it on. I don't know why it wasn't as effective, but this one, the original headline says, Stranded but Undaunted, U.S. Dancers, Beacon of Hope in Israel. All last week we talked about this contrast between the world today and the world tomorrow. And that's what Celtic Throne 2 in many ways is about. I mean, yes, there's a lot of history there as well, but it ends with this vision on the horizon. It ends with the future. And Christ told us we need to lift up our eyes. Lift up, look up, look at what God is doing. And you get a little bit of a snapshot of that in Celtic Throne 2, just to give you some of the high spots. I went through it in greater detail last week, but this article by Robert Samuelson, it says, now caught in the midst of a military crisis, their story is turning into something far larger than a performance schedule, a testament to bravery, artistic commitment, and human solidarity. It says, yet even as their situation grows precarious, the dancers remain emblematic of a deeper truth. Art, especially when sincere, transcends war. I mean, you do see examples in art. I mean, we have a concert series here on campus where we showcase the very best of the human spirit. And you see examples of sports. That's why the Apostle Paul referred to sports analogies quite often. Because you see a culture, a family culture, or just the spirit of hard work, aiming for the prize, going after the trophy. I mean, that's in 1 Corinthians 9. There are lessons that you can take away from someone that goes all out. It's amazing. And again, we're in so many ways, we have a lot of amateurs that are contributing to this beautiful production, but we're amazed at how many people giving feedback talk about the precision of it all and how unified it is. It's because God is behind it. God put it together. And even the professionals out in the world look at Celtic Throne and they say, how did you put this together? Where'd you come up with the music? How did you choreograph all this? We get a lot of help from God. And then when it goes abroad, and I don't even have time to get into just the miraculous journey. I touched on it at the start of the show. But just the fact that God got them through, even though they had to cancel the last two shows in Israel because of the war, miraculously, they made it out ahead of everyone else who's stranded in Israel. They made it to the UK, and they were able to perform last night in Birmingham, England, in front of 700 people who were very, very enthusiastic. That's all we have time for on today's show. The fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us on today's show. And we'll see you again tomorrow.